Hello again. You're probably getting tired of seeing me. But my name is Brad Perkins from 1641 T Avenue in Madrid. Myself and my wife are the applicants. And yes, we have requested approval of our conditional use permit for commercial campground and travel trailer park. Emily, could we go to the site plan first, the one by my architect? Sorry to go out of order here.
No, that's okay.
As a little bit of background, the whole point of having the commercial campground isn't necessarily to be a normal commercial campground that you think of, where there are, you know, lots every 40 feet across the entire area. That's not the case at all. Here we go. And if we could do the zoomed-in picture just on the bed and breakfast.
Okay.
The intent here is to have a bed and...
Sorry.
That's okay. That's okay.
I don't know.
There we go. That's close
that's
enough.
That's okay? Okay.
That's just fine. All right. So, as you all know, the permit for the conditional use permit for the bed and breakfast and event center has been approved. And the idea of this commercial campground is that this is in complement to the event venue in order to allow more people to stay on site without having to travel. That is it. This goes with the event venue. I'm not going to have a commercial campground without the event venue, and the event venue has already been approved. The intent here with the cabins is to give especially family and members of wedding party or reunion or whomever the opportunity to stay and thus reduce the amount of traffic on the road and reduce the comings and goings. Allow the family to get there early, stay a little bit later, leave the next day, to make the overall experience of getting married on our wedding venue a little bit better. The request for a commercial campground, really the only reason I have any RV spots at all, is that if there is something like a family reunion, corporate retreat, and somebody wants to bring a travel trailer, I wanted a few spots to be able to accommodate that. Nothing more. Really, the intent here is to have more people staying on site and less driving and less traffic. Now, if you looked at every building and I filled them all to capacity, I still don't think it's possible to get to 500 people. But we only have parking spots for 57 up by the lodge, another 10 or 12 up by the house, and then another 20 around the cabins. It's just not going to happen where we have 500 vehicles traveling back and forth or having 500 people there. That's not the intent. My intent is if we have a large event at the event venue is that would bring people to stay on property and to stay in the cabins. A lot less travel. All right. But also, it gives more opportunity for people that might be handicapped, you know, a little bit difficult getting around. If we make especially the first group so that we can have handicapped accessibility, makes it much easier than trying to take the large structure and make every room in it handicapped accessible. The addition, like we talked about before, would be, but my intent is to get more spaces. Now, this is a master plan. We have 20 cabins there, and definitely at the beginning, I have no intention of building 20. And if we wanted to start with half this number, or maybe even less, I would be perfectly fine. But our intent here is to have a master plan to tell you the sum total of everything. And I don't really need 20 to start. It'd be nice to have, like I said, maybe 8, something along those lines. Maybe even half the number of campground spots. If we look at the facility itself, with regards to, as Emily said, I asked my architect to make that turn there available for a 45-foot vehicle, so emergency medical vehicles will be able to get in. I spoke with, just yesterday, the West Story County Fire Marshal in Kelly, and he said none of his vehicles would be longer than that. We also spoke about access and the lodge and the cabins and what to make them out of. And his comment was, as long as you build them in accordance with building code, which I have, and they will be, he has no problems with the spatial separation between the buildings, neighboring structures, no worries about fighting fires. Now, Emily, could we turn to that water calculation that I did? With regards to water and, you know, water suitability, There are three sources of water that we're going to be able to have on this particular facility. One of them is Xenia Rural Water, to what they have stated they can provide 30 gallons per minute. There's an existing well on the property. This is the location one. The other one was the water calculation with the storage tank.
Yeah, I didn't include that in my PowerPoint.
Oh, sorry. Okay, no, that's all right. The intent there is that with a 4,400 square foot roof, 1 inch of rainfall would net 2,800 gallons of water for storage. I'm going to put a old idea to use again. The house that we originally bought, like many older houses in this area, had a cistern, and we're going to have a stormwater storage tank that will capture water from the roof of the event center, and I'm going to use that to flush toilets in the event center, and also for gardening or for watering lawn, irrigation, and the like. Speaking with the West Story Fire Marshal, their tanker is only able to hold 2,000 gallons, and he said that if they were able to fill up once more, he couldn't imagine a situation where they would need more than that. I mean, that's just he's going to attend the Board of Adjustment meeting in 2 weeks, and he's going to come out, and we're going to do a tour and look at the plans in between now and then. With regards to septic, a peat-based system for sewage would be able to handle, through the right permitting through the DNR, would be able to handle on-site and treat without the need of a lagoon, without the need of long laterals, would be able to handle and treat the sewage on-site. Here's the subject property. Now, with regards to transition and location, you'll see at the edge of Ames here the property right by Highway 30. One of the important things about finding a property location that would work for this type of venue is that you need to be a good neighbor. And part of that is having good access to, as other businesses that are out in the country have noted, increasing traffic on gravel roads and by neighbors can be difficult. So I wanted to find a place that has good access to a highway, and here we are within 3/4 mile of an entrance off of Highway 30. Could you turn to the next slide, please? Here's some of the neighboring area. If we look at the type of things that are across the highway, it is 1.7-mile walk from there to the Hilton Garden Inn, Perfect Games, Westtown Pub, and a bunch of residences. All right, let's continue to the next slide, if you would. All right. This is, can I borrow your red dot? The area that we're going to limit our development for the bed and breakfast and campus is this clearing here in between this forested area to the southwest and the creek that runs along through the property. Everything is going to be to the south of the house down in this area. If we look up here and if we want to talk about types of activities that are going to happen, staff was exactly right. There may very well be hiking, cookouts, dare I say it, even picnics. There is the odd chance that someone might play frisbee with their kids in this area. Very, very similar to the activities of this park and this park with the hiking trails in between there. With regards to doing these things in close proximity to single-family dwellings, just 7 miles down the road, there are single-family dwellings within 200 feet of the parking lots for the football stadium that have cooking, fires, campouts, that type of activity going on. If you look at where we're locating this, any future development that's not on this property that would be residential would be past what's already been here, is this field here, and then maybe back past here. The distance from our proposed area to this spot, if you'd turn to the next page, please. Oh, I'm sorry. That's across the street. This is a close-up of the hotel, Perfect Games, and then residents start here. We have multifamily residents here, but single-family dwellings here. Next slide, please. There's that in behind you. Keep going, please. Here we go. It is. Oh, let's see here. Is that 650 or 850?
800.
Okay, 800 and some to the edge of this hotel from this single-family dwelling. It is 760 feet to there. If we turn to the next slide, please. By locating this, you'll notice that both of these hotels are within a half mile as the crow flies, obviously. Next slide, please. And where my campgrounds are going to, kind of the center of the campground area, here's the edge of what is now farmland and what could be someday turned into residential. In other words, the distances from our items to future development would be very similar to what's already allowed on the other side of the road in the city development. Now let's go back to, if I could trouble you to, the next slide, please. Notice that the area south of this creek is actually in the Southwest 2 area. No development has happened on the south side of Highway 30 in the 12 years that this has been in the fringe plan. And from what I can tell, they are analyzing their plan for this area, and the Southwest 2 area would be even further away in terms of development. Everything that I am doing is in that Southwest 2 area. My point is, it's already been 12 years with no development on this side. They've already expressed to the current property owner that it's going to be another few years before they consider his other land north of the road. It could easily be another decade before anything is even done on this side. I don't know, and neither does anyone else. Can we look at that site plan, please? There we go. Thank you. So, yes, that's it. Okay. Thank you. So, this is already happening. These items are our proposal, which, as I said, I'd be willing to entertain any limits on this beyond what, you know, the 20, if you want to reduce down to something that you would consider better, I'd be interested in listening to what you might recommend. But my point is that I found a property that is currently zoned for this intended use. These cabins are slab-on-grade, single-story, 8-foot-to-the-eave cabins. If someone ever wants to come on buy us out in some year, nothing that we are doing here is going to prevent them from pushing this over and building whatever they would like on it. I understand for the future plan, and that's what a future plan is. Someday, someone might do this, and more power to them if they can economically buy us out. That's great. But other uses that could go in here, things like hog lots, cattle lots, those types of things could be built without permits, and they'd be much more difficult to mitigate and build over. Other conditional use permits would be for things like trash dumps and recycling centers. Those would be harder to mitigate and turn into houses. These would... Oops. Battery's falling out. Sorry. All right. These could be easily pave the way for other uses. Now, with regards to the floodplain, this is my architect's sketch. We haven't surveyed this area yet. We're waiting to go ahead. I'm not going to build anything in a floodplain. That won't be in there. That's not practical from an insurance standpoint. So I don't want you to have any concerns about any development within the floodplain. That'll be moved to whatever the survey says it is above our base flood elevation. So back to the intended use of the land. I truly appreciate, and I know they mean this, staff's offer to help me work with, to work with finding another property. Problem is that this isn't just like we came up with this idea last week. This represents a year and a half of work to get to this point. We have looked and looked for other places and other ideas, and we found one that is large enough that we can have a buffer that has trees to help us out with that buffer. If you look at most of the land in Story County, I don't think anyone's going to be surprised to learn that it's very flat and not a lot of trees, especially not on parcels this large. Some of those that do exist have the exact same issues. In other words, maybe they're within the fringe plan, or they're already agricultural, in which case I couldn't do this plan anyway. I can't take land out of crop production, and I can't take land out of, you know, any agricultural use, or at least that's the desire of the county. So I need something zoned agricultural that isn't being currently used for agricultural purposes, something large enough that I can have a good buffer in between myself and neighbors and good access to the roads. This is our solution for it. It is currently zoned for this use. I understand the future use, and I don't think there's one thing that we are doing here that would preclude anyone from doing any of those uses nearby. Are there any questions I could answer for the commission?
Thanks. We may have one second of it.
Emily, did you want to start?
Is anyone who would like to comment on this proposal? If so, would you step up to the podium and give us your name and address? Also, would you please keep your comments as brief and concise and tight as you can and avoid repetitive comments, please?
Is that directed to me?
You just happen to
I get that all the time.
Yes.
Usually at home.
Yeah.
Greg Arvanian, 317 6th Avenue, Suite 900, Des Moines. Here on behalf of the neighboring property owners, Jim and Teresa Polensky, owners of the property immediately to the west and south of this proposed site. I would simply say that your staff have done a thorough job of reviewing the application and all of the myriad problems presented by the application. And they have done an exemplary job of vetting all of the potential impacts of this proposed application. I encourage that this board adopt the staff's, all the staff's findings, comments, and recommendations in their entirety without change, and adopt alternative number 3 as recommended by staff without change. I think this proposal extends somewhat dramatically and dangerously the intensity and the burden of use on this property. It places campgrounds, cabins, potentially open fires within no more than 350 feet of my of the Polensky's property. There's still no provision at all in the application documents that demonstrate how fire protection is going to be provided for that. That is a large, sprawling proposed development, which will now encompass open fire for people who want to grill out or have campfires at the cabins or their RVs in close proximity to an adjacent residence. That is one of the most alarming aspects of this proposed CUP, as far as I can tell. I'm not sure about the adequacy of the septic plan, but I don't see that any provision to comply with the IDNR requirements is set forth in the application. For those reasons, we would ask that this court, or this, I'm sorry, this committee adopt the findings and conclusions and recommendations of your staff in their entirety. Thank you.
Kim Christensen, I'm here with my wife Becky. We live at 2985 South Dakota. We have two of the houses that are contiguous to the east of this property. I think from our perspective, we find this very consistent with the property and the use of the property if you're going to make it economical. Right now it's trees, it's probably part of a CRP program, something like that. and paying very low in taxes. But if you're going to do anything with it economically, I don't know what you could do that would be more consistent with the property around it. And certainly from our perspective, we would love to see something like this happen. The interesting part, one of the things the staff is doing is saying, hey, we've got to be concerned about this fringe plan that the city has entered into with the county in 2006. I don't remember being asked for my opinion when I lost my property rights to the city of Ames during that particular plan. Doug, he wanted to sell his house. He happened to build it on 75 acres. The city wouldn't let him split off 4 acres, 5 acres, 15 acres, so he could sell the house at 75 acres. If the only way he could do that, he had to enter all sorts of obligations that had to be put on the land and himself and his family to sell it. That's the way the city is operating. I have a piece of property. I wanted to build a house and have my daughter live on 2 acres. Legally, I could split it, no problem. But the city says, no, you can't split it because you're within 2 miles. And your part not only is 2 miles, but you're in the high end 2 miles, the miles that they're the area that they're most interested in trying to look at development, high priority. So we could not split that the property. So they can't get a loan on it without me paying off the loan on all the other property that I have. It's kind of an interesting way that the city is deciding that they're going to try to annex as much as they can by using their 80-20 deal, and they want to keep everybody at bay, and so just their developers that they decide are the ones that are going to come in and end up doing the development. To say this isn't this is inconsistent with what might be developed with 3.7 minimum housing units, how is that consistent with what's there today? It isn't. But it would be if they had a water and sewer brought out there. But they're not bringing water and sewer out. They're not giving us any incentive to be able to develop. They just want to control our land and economic use of our land until someday, maybe, they'll want to use it. So please, if you don't approve this or you want to change it and it's fire, road, whatever, I don't have any problem with that. But don't not approve it because the city has decided that they want to have the control over our property. So we're in favor of it.
Doug McKay, 3016 Burnham Drive, Ames, 5500 is the address of the house. Kim put it well, the city's trying to control things out there. When I asked the city to consider changing their, their use plan, whatever they call it, I told them, you've already approved, and there already is a conditional use permit for YSS. It belongs to us because it belongs to the landowner. But there's a conditional use permit that's been approved for the bed and breakfast for Perkins, and also one for YSS to build a facility out there. And I told the city, if you really look at things for the long term future. Which one is going to be better for the long-term future of Ames if they want to develop houses out there, which they don't seem to want to do, because I did take them a developer. I had a developer go to the city in November, I think it was, and he wanted to develop all the ground that we own north of the 240th Street, and the city just said no. They said, actually, what they said was they didn't have time to look at it because they were too busy doing other things, and they wouldn't even look at it. But if you look at the long term from the city's point of view, as Brad pointed out, long term he's going to have these cabins that aren't going to be very expensive. They're going to be slab on grade. And if somebody wants to build a new house, if you bought a house in town that had a lot in town that had a decrepit old house on it, you wouldn't hesitate to tear that house down and build a new house on that lot. And that's what could happen with this. On the other hand, if it comes to YSS building on that property, the YSS, Brad someday will die, as we all will, and he might retire before then, and they might put the land up for sale. But someday that land will probably come back up for sale. If YSS builds a facility on that property isn't going to come up for sale for probably, assuming that they'll build a reasonable type building, it might be 100 years before that comes back up for sale, and at that time somebody would have to tear it down before it could become in the city limits. So really, this is a lot better proposal, I would think, from the city's point of view, than the YSS thing. And by the way, the way I understand it, the neighbor sued about the YSS conditional use permit, and I understand that suit is coming up on the 18th of May. So that might all get decided at that point. Anyway, if anybody has any questions of me, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you. Any other comments?
My name is Lisa Harmison. I live at 2060 South 500th, which is west but not adjacent to this property, so we're within the quarter mile of it. I realize that my comments are different from some of my neighbors in that I'm actually not in favor of this, and I probably should have spoke up before, but as you might tell from my voice, I don't have a very strong voice because of the bug I'm getting over. When we built our house, we did have to deal with the city in terms of subdivision because there was a house already on the property. And this was before the agreement that the board has with the city of Ames. So we're not real keen to have the city say things to influence our neighbors, and we certainly don't want to be annexed. But having lived in this area for about 18 years now, one thing that hasn't come up is the practicality of this. I'm one of the few people that actually walk or jog or ride bikes on 240th, and the increase in traffic on that road, being gravel, is a real concern to me from a safety aspect. And the other concern I have is the noise. We moved out to the country because we like the sounds that have nature provides for us. There have been times, that we have heard our neighbors having parties, so we hear the music and stuff. One of these times that this happened, our neighbors were 3/4 of a mile away. I know that because we had somebody come to our house asking where they lived so they could go to this party. Others I've heard, I have no idea how far away they are, but this only happens 2 or 3 times a year. With this might be happening every single weekend, that there's going to be noise. And I imagine we're going to hear that noise at our house because it's much closer and it's going to be much louder. And I'm not really keen to listen to other people, even though they're having a good time in a party and that's wonderful. But the main reason we live out in the country is to get away from the noise of the people and not live in town. And so I would actually encourage this commission to support the recommendation of staff and deny the special use permit. Thank you.
Other comments? Can I close the public hearing on this? So if you have any other comments, now's the time.
Okay. Can I speak again?
I'd prefer that you not. So we need to move on. We may have some questions for the applicant, but we will move on now. Not yet. All right, we're going to close the public hearing portion and get on to commission discussion.
So is it Kelly's Fire Department?
We should have just put you right up there.
That's okay. Yes, go ahead.
Is it Kelly?
Yeah, the Kelly West Story Fire Department, yes.
So I guess I'm not worried about the fire because I come from a small town, and when we have a fire, every other fire department in rural Story County comes and helps. And
yes, that's what he told me on the phone, that they have.
So I don't think fire is going to be a problem like you might think. Because we had a big one in Colo, and Colo Collins, Maxwell Ziering, and Nevada was there. And the rural communities really worked together.
Well, and fire chief has asked me if I'd put a 2-inch fire hose connection for that tank, so that they could refuel their tankers. That way, they wouldn't have to go into town again. So that's fire department connection on the side of a building is easily done.
Mm-hmm. We go to support their recommendation. That's it then, or does he have any recourse to?
We're just the recommending body, so it moves on to the Board of Adjustment for another hearing and a decision.
Another hearing.
So all this will come in front of them?
Yes, it will.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, I don't know what to think. I understand our agreement with in supporting the Ames Urban Fringe Plan and entering into that. I understand that. I think where it makes sense, right? We usually defer to the city of Ames because it's development that's happening, things like north on with around the golf course and other developments and things over there where it's we defer to development that the city of Ames is wanting.
In certain districts, like transitional districts,
right,
we would yield to the city's
right. I see this one as really a question about Ames may or may not have an actual plan for this area. I mean, they have, it's in the fringe plan. There's no pending development. It's not interfering with something that's currently published. They're actually in the process of revising it and revisiting it. I know that the goal has always been for the city of Ames to develop west. They always expected the development to happen west, and all of the development has actually has happened west, north of the highway. Most of it's pushing north. So the questions about not doing this because of traffic or noise or things like that, really it's a question of do you want an entire subdivision next to you, which is what the city of Ames wants, or do you want something that might occasionally have traffic or occasionally have noise with less density? So I don't know what to think. They've been here before and put forth very consistent and logical arguments and discussions about camping, and we actually put forth text amendments to support this exact activity. And now it's here, and we're saying, we don't want to do it because it's not consistent with what we think the city of Ames wants to do.
But this is an agreement with all three entities. It's not just the city of Ames. That agreement with Gilbert, Ames,
right.
And Story.
So is Gilbert,
something
is Gilbert
Story responding? County agrees to now, and there's a process spelled out in the Ames River Fringe Plan and the 28E agreement to make changes. And that's part of our point. There's a process that needs to be followed to make changes to the land use.
Mr. Chair, can I speak to that particular point?
I have a question.
Not at the moment.
Okay, sure.
Is
I had a question, or maybe it's a comment. I think I might. The text amendment was about the cabins. That was not particular to this property. Or conditional for this property.
It was not. It's particular to this property.
I thought that was.
Countywide, you're absolutely correct. Prompted by a request.
It was prompted by the request, and as I remember, and I wasn't at the last meeting when the conditional use permit for the bed and breakfast was approved, but I was here for the previous one, and it was simply, I think this commission felt that there wasn't a logical reason to say that the county could create cabins, but a private entity could not.
Right.
So that was more of a philosophy of that than what should happen at this site and why.
Agreed.
Okay, thank you.
So the other question, though, I have is, you know, we had a different presentation this morning, and it was near is the mobile home with doing RVs, and I know it's not any bearing on this, but the question about, it's right near that park. What's the park that it's with the pond, with the lake?
Hickory Grove.
Hickory Grove, right? So, if how do you establish something like Hickory Grove, right? How do you get something that, if this location, where it's at, away from almost everything, I understand there's a handful of residences around it, but you're away from almost everything, but in close vicinity to the city. If you don't allow this to go forward and do something like, where and when and how are you going to have the opportunity to do something like that? Right? How do you establish something like that if everybody says, you know, not here, not now, not here?
I want to make a motion to approve the continued use permit 08-117.
Is there a second?
Okay, say that again, please. Because their recommendation.
I'm moving to approve.
He's making a motion.
I'm making a motion to approve it.
The motion on the floor is to approve the conditional use permit.
Gotcha.
With no attached conditions.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Cable and second by Smith to approve the CUP as proposed. Any discussion on the motion? Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Merkin?
No.
Cable?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Mins?
Yes.
McBride?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes. Motion carries. You'll be advancing to the Board of Adjustment. You'll get to hit everybody here. So,
thank you very much.
Thanks for coming in. Thank you for all your comments. And we are going to take a 10-minute recess, please. So it's... Let's call the meeting back to order.
Do we have any offline discussions where we need to bring anything back after that?
Well, I think it was noted that we were offered eggs as a gift, which technically did not exceed the value that any public official is supposed to receive. But I think it's worth noting for the record that it doesn't look good for that to happen at a public meeting and for us to accept them. So
what happened?
Is everyone under? Well, we were offered eggs. Farm fresh eggs is a gift.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
That's
right
before the recess. So.
Okay,
understood.
I think
probably not a good thing.
If we have any questions about the gift laws of Iowa, please direct them to Jerry, and he will get legal counsel as necessary. But generally, probably just a good idea to assess those sorts of things.
No, and
it seems so innocent, but I get it. But well, right after a decision has been made and somebody gives a gift, it's not good.
I'm with you.
I don't know. I think her intention was to
be one thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So well, the funny thing is, like I said, one thing I went to the grocery store on my way here today was for eggs. I forgot it. And here this happens, I'm going, yeah.
You told me that.
It's okay. I'm good.
All right. Yeah, so awkward situations pop up, and we'll just have to deal with them.
Moving on.
Let's move on to 7-1. Anchorman Fringe Plan Review, the North Plan area.
All right. This was a review that staff started several months ago. And it's part of our work program. Our work program is something that we work together with the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Supervisors to come up with things that the Commission and the Board would like us to look into outside of our normal activities. So what we did was we looked at the area north of the City of Ames' current corporate limits up to the City of Gilbert's corporate limits. We looked to the northeast of that area, to the northwest, and also to the west of Ames, western Ames. Things that prompted the interest in just looking at this, doing this review, was the fact that the agreement took place in 2006. And we really haven't taken that opportunity. Although if you read the details in the plan, there was supposed to be a study that was supposed to take place with the three entities looking in a greater detail of that area, you know, between the two cities. So in the interim, we've had the construction of the Gilbert High School, traffic on Hyde, paving. Well, we issued quite a few zoning permits in 2017. Over half of them were in the north area, north of Ames. A few rural residential subdivisions, Ames sewer study that they did for the northwest part of Ames prompted it. So we looked at a number of what we call layers. We looked at the land use, we looked at zoning, soils information, comprehensive plans. By the way, the city, as what's been noted, the City of Ames is currently going through this consideration of updating their comprehensive plan. They hope to hire a consultant this summer and likely get started in the fall. We learned a few weeks back that the City of Gilbert is updating their comprehensive plan. We looked at utility information, you know, water, electric service, aerial photography. What else? We talked to school districts regarding planning, infrastructure projects within the school districts. And we also met with planning staff at Ames and the city clerk at Gilbert to kind of go through what we see as opportunities. A lot of these things really rely on the interest and willingness of the landowners, relies on the market conditions, also relies on what's going to take place with these comprehensive plans that are being developed by the cities. But for the most part, we came up with recommendations. We see within like the northeast area, the northwest area, we've got existing rural residential developments. We see within some of those subdivisions, there's room for growth within. We see opportunities where some of these existing subdivisions are for expansion. Some of these would involve map changes, land use changes, and zoning changes. And again, to make a map change requires all three entities to support that change. We support the urban residential designations. The City of Gilbert, south of their corporate limits, is designated urban residential. That also has a what is referred to as an urban growth boundary. And that's something that comes from a designation that's in the C2C plan of the county. And it's pretty broad, and it can include any type of proposed development that might occur that's within the planning auspices of the city. It could be residential development, commercial, industrial. And the idea is if we get a development application, we would defer to the city to first see if they're interested in annexing, requiring their development standards, so it would be developed under more of an urban setting. If they defer, then it would fall to the county. So, you know, we support that. We also see the possibility of supporting like an urban growth boundary north of Ames' current corporate limits. You know, it could be quarter mile, eighth of a mile in width, but, you know, we get calls frequently, interest in developing like a small rural type subdivision in this area. And again, with the urban growth boundary, we would yield to the city to see if it's something that they want to annex and impose the city standards as a first option. Otherwise, it would default to the county. Otherwise, if you look at your document, the second page has the land use designation. You'll see a light green color, and that's ag farm service, ag and farm service. Much of the land use just north of the Ames and corporate limits is farm ground. There are some scattered single-family dwellings, a few, as I said, residential parcel subdivisions. But we also see a possibility of allowing, one more opportunity to build maybe another dwelling on some of these parcels where there's an existing dwelling, which is what you can do in the other areas of the county outside of the Ames River Fringe. Because right now, if you're in an ag and farm services area, it discourages what we allow for a simple division to allow another dwelling. So the second page on the back gives you the zoning, so you can kind of see most of that is where you see an aerial that's A1 agricultural district zoning. Just southwest of the city, there's a commercial light industrial node there for their treatment facility. And again, most of the zoned areas are to the northeast and to the northwest, where we have existing rural-type residential developments. The yellow is R1, transitional residential. The brown is AR, agricultural residential, which allows like a one-acre lot. R1 is 25,000 square foot minimum lot size. So the back, where you have this blue map, this is from the 2040 land use plan that the city of Ames put together a few years back, and it primarily identifies very limited growth outside of the current corporate limits. You see some areas like west of George Washington Carver. I think they show 50 or fewer households in that area. They show a little node just south of Gilbert, anywhere from 50 to 100 households. So again, we took this information into consideration. But the look at the very back. We tried to get down to more specific locations. And again, these are opportunities where existing developments could be expanded, or where they're adjacent to existing developments, new improvements could be made. But again, these are things that are going to rely on property owners' interest, willingness to make the change, market conditions, the planning that's going on now between the cities. And again, if there's a map amendment, it does involve all of the three entities to support that. So, and I think, from the meeting that we had with the city, again, they did acknowledge that they are going through this comprehensive plan update process. The city of Gilbert staff rep did tell us that they support the school's annual growth rate of like, I think, 3 to 3.5% per year. So a slow, steady growth is what they would get behind to stay consistent with the facilities planning with the school district. But again, these are opportunities. We're hoping that as the cities go through their comprehensive planning process, that they take some of these points into consideration when they do that. And I would love to have a motion, because the idea is that we would take this to the Board of Supervisors at a future meeting. But I welcome your input on this, suggestions on other ideas, questions about anything that's identified in here.
You don't need a motion tonight, though, do you?
I would love to have a motion tonight. Or I'd be happy to answer your questions. We can bring it back in April. But it's something that we do want to take to the board.
You'd like more time to review it?
I would like more time to review it, exactly. And maybe have some questions to ask.
Okay. There's a lot to it. And like I said, we spent quite a few months trying to pull all the information.
Yeah, and I apologize. I didn't have time to get to the packet before today, and I just couldn't get through the whole thing because it was so long.
Well, and part of that's on us. We didn't get this out there until Monday.
Yeah.
There was a lot of things that we were working on. And
I might not have been so discouraged if you hadn't put all those administrative rules in it.
What's that?
Well, maybe the applicant did. All the administrative rules about the daycare centers?
In the first...
The DHS rules?
You said all of the rules? I think there's...
He's talking about the Center Grove Orchard.
Was it or it was?
All the administrative rules.
There's a lot of stuff to read in that packet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
About 50 pages. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there was...
But anyway, I would like some more time. Okay.
I think any motion, but three comes to mind. One, that we just... advance this to the board of supervisors as it's generally supporting this, or the reverse of that, or we can say thanks for the review, let's spend more time studying it, and we'll do a motion, we'll take action on it next time.
Right, and if there's major concerns, we definitely want to know about it so that we can respond to it.
Is there a motion?
I'm going to push this to a later time.
Sure.
Specific on the next meeting?
April 3.
Is there, so your motion is the next meeting?
Yep.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Motion by McBride, second by Merkin. Any discussion on the motion? I think we owe it to staff to study it between now and then and plan on taking action next time rather than just sometime in the future.
Well, I read through it, but, you know.
Okay. Any other discussion? Do you have a roll call, please?
Cable.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Mins.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Perkins.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, draft stormwater and erosion control ordinance, Amelia.
Okay, so I don't need a motion. This is a draft. We wanted to bring it to you for feedback because we have solicited some feedback and want to go through what we've received and what we're thinking and see what you all think. So first off, this ordinance and these amendments are being proposed because we realize our current ordinance is lacking in both stormwater and erosion control areas. I know you guys have seen some recent, you know, developments where this might be the case, but just going out on sites thinking, hey, we need some sort of enforcement mechanism for why there are no erosion control barriers down when there should be, for instance. And so I'm just going to briefly go through this. We sent out this ordinance to developers and environmental stakeholders, environmental groups, and posted it on the website and posted it on some bulletin boards in the courthouse to get public feedback as well. And so there are a couple key areas where we got some feedback and might be doing some changes. So first off, on the first page under definitions, I just want to talk about one, and it is pre-development condition. And so this applies to the rates of stormwater runoff that we're requiring the developer to control for. And pre-development condition does not mean prehistoric in our case. It does in some other ordinances. We're just saying at the time you're proposing the development, we're not talking about prairies in Iowa, bringing it back to stormwater rates of prairies. So first, looking at erosion control, so this is more applicable to when actual construction work is going on in the site. The first portion of erosion control has to do with when a grading permit and erosion control plan would be required. We are proposing when 10,000 square feet or more has been disturbed. This proposal was based in part on what we thought would happen if there was a subdivision that was three lots or more, and looking at past conditional use permits and commercial development for the amount of area disturbed. There is some concern that this is too small. Maybe an acre would be more appropriate, half an acre. I think we're open to considering that. But again, you know, the state requires an NPDES permit, which is like a stormwater permit for construction sites at an acre level. And we were hoping to have some sort of enforcement mechanism under that acre level as well. And so we had also proposed that a grading permit and erosion control plan would be applicable if natural resource areas were disturbed or at the discretion of the planning and development director. These came about because we have a watershed study consultant, and we had originally proposed that if a significant amount of natural area was disturbed, or a significant adverse impacts could occur, then we would require this plan. They said, hey, that's hard to define. What is that? We tried to put a number on it and to reserve discretion, which is what they suggested. I think we need to work on the wording of that, maybe outline a timeline and a process if we keep the discretion aspect, and maybe also think about how we can better define natural areas as highly erodible areas, because that's really what we care about. You know, if you're going to be building on a really steep slope or soil that's, you know, a really low soil horizon that's highly erodible, that's what we're trying to protect here.
Is there an understood definition of when you're saying when an area is disturbed?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is that a well understood term when you say disturb an area? I'm driving a truck over an area.
Right.
That's going to disturb it, but if I'm doing it one time, does that mean I have to now count the entire path that I've driven over as part of this 10,000 square, you know what I mean?
We'd be adding that as a definition. Thank you. There are a couple exemptions I want to point out, too. The county engineer was concerned about having to get a grading permit and stormwater erosion control plan every time he does maintenance on road ditches.
Right.
So that's an exemption. And we've also have an ag exemption in there, so folks tilling their fields or what have you.
Terrace or something.
Right.
Terrace. Moving on to some of the requirements of the erosion control plan, there was a concern from one of the developers about having a buffer zone for construction projects on 100 feet on both sides of a surface water. So that would mean you can't disturb within 100 feet of a surface water. It was expressed that a lot of time they do stream straightening and work in a stream, but we don't think that's the case. You'd need a floodplain permit, maybe approval from the DNR or the Corps of Engineers. We haven't seen that before, and we think it's really important to keep a buffer between our surface waters where this erosion might go and exposed soil. We also had some suggestions about topsoil not being removed unless required, and then if it was removed, being respread. This is actually something that's in Marshall County's erosion control ordinance, so just to the east of us. It's also something that's encouraged in the Iowa Statewide Urban Design Manual, but there was some pushback on that as well and how it can be preserved on site. I think we're going to stand behind that one, though, that it's important, especially if folks want to grow grass. But we're open to suggestions if, you know, they think it's a small area and can't be stored on site but can be brought on back on site later. But I think it's important to have topsoil respread just so we maintain that.
My yard has zero topsoil.
Yeah.
So I can relate to that.
Okay. And finally, moving into the inspections and responsibilities section. And a lot of these sections overlap with stormwater control. So we're concerned, you know, we're not engineers. A lot of times engineers are the ones that design these plans. We wanted to make it clear that our review of these plans does not construe an engineer's review or approval that this is in any way correct.
And we're not requiring an engineer to submit
the erosion control plan. But we are requiring an engineer to submit the stormwater control plan. We're going to be rewriting this to make that clearer, that we're just...
We shouldn't say we. It's the amendment that we're working
on. Yeah. So that's the section that you can look for changes in. Moving into stormwater, again, we have the 10,000 square feet or more area of impervious surfaces created as a threshold. So that would be your driveway, your pole barn, and your house would all count towards that impervious surface created. We felt that that was about three houses, so a three-lot or more subdivision would be required to have a stormwater control plan. It's really similar to what Ames has, and it's similar to a lot of other counties like Polk County, for instance, a stormwater plan is required for subdivisions, and so is Johnson County. So Ames and other counties and some of the feedback we got was that it's 10,000 square feet or an acre. Again, an acre area disturbed. We're going to have to think about that one and whether or not we'd be open to getting rid of the square foot impervious surface created and just going with an area disturbed, or how to handle that. But again, the goal was a three-lot subdivision.
Or as a percentage, right?
Sure. So the main difference with stormwater is that we have some numeric standards for controlling for runoff that apply. And so these are from the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual. A lot of other counties and cities have adopted these same standards. And they basically control from your most common rain event, the runoff created by that first flush rain event, to, you know, your extreme rain events, you know, your 100-year storm events, and making sure that, you know, in the case of the most common rain event, there's appropriate infiltration provided on the site. In the case of your other storm events, that the rate of runoff does not increase over the existing level, to protect stream banks, and to, you know, provide additional flood control. One comment was made that there were concerns that by referencing design guidelines for best management practices such as swales or buffers or retention ponds, that we're limiting how folks can control for stormwater, limiting more creative proposals. That wasn't our intent. If you can put in green roofs on all the houses in your subdivision and have rain barrels and collect the rainwater and have no runoff, I think you wouldn't have an issue with, you know, meeting the requirements.
I would say what you want to do is you want to say using, you know, current best practices.
Sure. Or,
you know, whatever, and then refer them to whoever that expert body is in the state of Iowa, if that's DNR or, you know.
Right. Sure. Right now
don't let us define it. Just say, if we're making suggestions, then say,
yeah,
we recommend you listen to them, right, whoever them is.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. One other related point that was brought up is just about the concept of low-impact development and conservation design and subdivisions in general. Originally, we had a section in this ordinance that related to, you know, incentives, so you could develop at a smaller lot size if you cluster your lots and limit impervious area. We are going to pursue that at a later date. maybe fit it into our subdivision regulations instead. But some folks who provided feedback did say, you know, it'd be good to provide some sort of incentive for doing the right thing. And of course, we want to encourage creative designs that are sustainable. And finally, we also had one comment that was maybe some examples of what somebody would have to do on a certain site to meet our standards would be relevant. Prairie Rivers of Iowa offered to maybe look at some recent development cases and see what may be required under the standards. I think that's a good idea. So, any comments?
About who we sent it to?
Mm-hmm.
It's also on the county's website, so we're taking input from the general public too. Anybody that has interest in it. Mm-hmm. And we realize that we're just getting started with this. We're in the initial stages.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to work toward the
Not the cities.
Not the cities, or is just the city?
It's unincorporated areas where this would apply. Ames has their own stormwater and erosion control.
I'm sitting here thinking that as we ship all this water from Gilbert, Ames, right down here to all this farm. Ground that gets out of the creeks and the erosion is atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in my profession, those people are paying gigantic insurance because they're in the flood zone that Ames has shipped their water down and mm-hmm. has flooded their grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no recourse, the farmers.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point, and that, you know, as more development's happening in Story County, mm-hmm. it's important that we control for what we can.
Ames is doing a lot, though, with stormwater retention and has been for years.
Mm-hmm.
So you just can't let that water run off your parking lot and go anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at development, and to me it wasn't particularly when we had that Cameron States one. It was very close to Squaw Creek. That was my concern there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was where is that? Well, what is the drainage there? Some people in Hickory Hills were complaining that this was going to happen. Well, they were kind of involved in that, too, in terms of the drainage off that area. But, yeah, we, you know, it's just not thought about enough what happens when you develop, you know, when you do a subdivision or when you do this in the land, where's the water going?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad to see this. I don't know if this is all the right things in here, but I'm glad to see that you're working on this and working with Prairie Rivers. I think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll definitely be ratting it out to folks again for more comment, maybe making a few changes.
The grading permit would be required if somebody wanted to construct a pond.
We had that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a detail we'd have to work through. Maybe at minimum have them submit a plan that addresses like erosion control, so we're taking a look at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our grading permit doesn't really address, oh, hey, you can't fill here, you can't remove here. It's more about when you are doing those things, make sure you put down sediment barriers and avoid, you know, disturbing the whole site at once. You know, take it in different steps. I know some counties do have, though, limits on filling and grade and
right.
excavation.
And then also, is there a way so that 10,000 square feet of impervious surface that would trigger stormwater management regulations,
mm-hmm.
is there a way to, how do you prevent somebody from just doing it incrementally, you know, another rooftop and another rooftop?
Sure.
Another rooftop.
So we originally had in here a provision that if you didn't previously have to submit a stormwater control plan and you developed a site, you had to bring it all into compliance. However, we had issues with defining pre-development not as you know, meadow condition and also having that provision in there. So if you guys are interested in maybe looking at, you know, meadow condition and having folks control for all the impervious surfaces on a site, that's definitely something we could look at. We didn't think that would be received so well, but
yeah. Well,
it was,
you're talking about like new projects.
Yeah.
With that?
You're talking about like new projects that come along maybe in the same.
Well, yeah, let's say like an A2 type of business, like mm-hmm. an ag commercial. Let's say a seed corn dealer. Not agricultural, but puts up one shed.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then 3 years later he's growing and he puts up another shed. And each time he doesn't ever exceed the 10,000 square feet.
Sure. So, you know, with the provision we had before, if he was required to control it for development that had happened before, we thought, okay, that would be a good provision to prevent that from happening. But then when we look at the actual numeric standards for how you're controlling for that runoff, we're telling folks that you just have to bring the runoff back to pre-development levels. And we define pre-development as, you know, the state at which the land is in, at which point we get that new proposal. So it was the two just didn't mesh. So if we're looking at, you know, having folks cumulatively meet that 10,000 square foot impervious surface requirement, I think we'd also need to think about redefining pre-development. And if that was a meadow in good condition, like prairie.
Well, there's new regulations. I would just do 9,900 square feet each time I.
Yeah,
we need to be able to address that, though, so yeah. that doesn't happen.
Right.
Because this is a permit for 9,900 square foot structure. Boom. Next year. Here's my permit for my 9,900 square foot.
So
we need to make sure that doesn't happen.
Right, but I think we need to change the numeric criteria in order to make sure that doesn't happen.
How do you make sure that doesn't happen?
Okay.
You had a department of three people.
I'm talking about through the amendment that we're working on. Mm-hmm. That's how we're going to address it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Address it.
So you're going to have to go through the history of permits.
Sure. So I think the clean solution would be, hey, before any development happened on this site, control for that level. And that's what some counties and cities do. I think that's the alternative.
Any other input on the ordinance for the staff? We'll be seeing more of that later on.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, you'll see it probably several times.
Okay.
For sure.
Thanks.
Thanks, Amelia. Then we're on to the
transportation impact analysis.
Yeah, with him.
Okay. So our current ordinance really, as you've seen in cases that have come before you, doesn't address the impacts of a development on traffic. There's really nothing in our ordinance that even really speaks to that. And so what we're proposing here is kind of a multi-tiered ordinance that gets to more detail as the projects increase in size. So the first thing you have there are a few definitions. Level of service is a measurement used by traffic engineers and traffic planners. Level of service A represents completely free flowing traffic. Level of service F represents a stop and go traffic. Traffic calming, those are techniques to reduce motor vehicle speed on roadways. A lot of times you'll see that, you'll hear about traffic calming measures in cities taking place in like downtowns. The traffic impact analysis and study are differentiated in the ordinance.
They're two different things.
The traffic impact analysis would be required For all major residential subdivisions as well as commercial and industrial development. That would be required at the time of conceptual review, which is something that we do administratively to provide applicants kind of more information about the county requirements on a project that they're proposing. So that would be a very scaled down version of this larger, potentially very large study that that could be done. So that would include determining the number of vehicle trips generated by the proposed development, looking at the existing number of vehicle trips currently within a quarter mile of the proposed site, and then determine if and give an overview of determine if existing traffic infrastructure can meet the needs of the proposed development in terms of safety and then keeping the traffic moving. So that would, again, be for all major residential subdivisions and any commercial or industrial development. Then, based on that, this ordinance gives the Story County Engineer and the Story County Board of Supervisors oversight of requiring more information. So this would be the traffic impact study then would be required and would be required with the preliminary plat. So for projects that would generate up to 100 new vehicle trips on the project site or on nearby roads, we would request this kind of abbreviated traffic impact study, which would include peak vehicle trip numbers, average daily trips, levels of service, existing levels of service, determining what the site distances would be for proposed publicly dedicated streets and access drives. So there are just more information could be requested. And then if the proposed development would create more than 100 vehicle trips in the peak direction, inbound or outbound, so during rush or busy times, rush hour, we could require a complete traffic study, which would have the most level of detail. The engineer of the board would also make that determination whether or not that was necessary. And the complete traffic study is just there's a little more information required, but it's for a larger area around the proposed development. So that's what we're thinking. Again, this is just a draft we wanted to bring forward for your consideration, for your feedback on. We're not taking any motion today.
Right. Yeah, and we provided Darren's feedback and included his comments in this draft. And sources that we used.
We looked at a variety of traffic impact analysis and study ordinances from counties and cities in Iowa and across the country, and try to make it consistent with what our process is right now, and kind of fit it into it.
One of the things that I have no understanding of and I don't have any solutions to is that whenever you're dealing with development and traffic impacts and having some thresholds where, okay, now we need improvements, you're only assessing the cost of those improvements to the last developer. And it was step-by-step development after development after development that led to the eventual need for the improvements. I'm thinking like of it by the country club, you know, and so how do you begin to address that?
So this ordinance really, it really doesn't.
Somebody needs to be looking at the bigger picture, and
right.
Part of that is, you know, we're involving the county engineer, we're involving the board, We know we have a capital improvements planning process every year. It's a five-year plan. We have a budget that the county approves, and so that has to be a big part of this.
I mean, I suppose you could do special assessments and assess all of the nearby property owners, but then you're assessing individual property owners and not the developer, you know.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it just needs to start somewhere and eventually catches up. Yeah, it might not be fair to the first developer, but if you keep doing it and you keep doing it, then you're going to be parceling it out for each development.
We looked at, this would give the opportunity for the board to require a specific project within the immediate vicinity of a development. We did some research into like traffic impact fees, which are common across the country. However,
but not in every state.
But not in every state. And from what I found, Iowa does not have the enabling legislation to allow any government entity to assess traffic impact fees. The difference would be that money would be put into a pot and could be used anywhere in the county. With this ordinance, this allows like on-site directly related projects to the development to be required or cost shared or whatever with the developer.
So rather than fees that can be used as part of your development, you need to do these three things.
Correct.
Some of that might be borne, cost might be borne by the county through a CUP.
It's kind of a uniquely county problem because if you're talking urban development, the buildup of development to the point where you needed improvements pre-existed a long time ago. It's not just the final one that triggers it.
Mm-hmm.
Another question I had is just the determining when study is necessary,
mm-hmm.
determined by the county engineer or by the board of supervisors. So that selfishly leaves us out of the loop, right? I mean, how do we say, gosh, we like this proposal, but we're uncertain about the traffic, let's do a study?
I think you could make that recommendation. Yeah. I mean, you're recommending board. I think you could make that recommendation to the Board of Supervisors.
Right.
Who would then require it.
Sure.
Yes, but yes, you're correct.
Since someone is, I'm sure this conversation about traffic study was someplace else, but it very definitely came up with this commission in regards to some proposals. So maybe it's something we should consider, and maybe writing it in there somewhere means that we will consider it more and remember to say somebody should look at traffic on this, and maybe that's the point where we say at some point with the development or with an application, bring it back when there's a traffic study.
Either before or after the input from the county engineer?
I think those kind of go together.
But recommending that traffic study be done is a good step, but it doesn't allow it. The results of the traffic study would be part of our recommendation. Just getting pretty sure that it's a good idea.
I mean,
here's the point about the county engineer's recommendation. Darren makes a recommendation on what's on that road right now. This talks about what is the impact going to be
with the development project.
With the development that's being proposed. That's the critical difference there. So no, I think that. Darren does it the way he does. That's what the county engineer does it. But I think it requires more to really responsibly look at a proposal.
One lever we would always have, though, too, is remand the proposal back, specifically requesting the county engineer's office to look closer to see if a study is necessary.
Because these plats are going to come to P&Z before they go to the board.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we are, like Emily said, we're going to get the analysis at conceptual review, which is early on, so that
if you guys know that this is out there, right? If we have these ordinances out there, then it kind of is up to you guys to say, we can just tell you,
hey, we're going to want to see these. So when you're doing it on the front end and seeing the preliminary stuff, you could say, yeah, there's probably going to be a traffic impact, and the zoning commission is going to want to see that.
Not just, Darren, we'd like your interagency comments.
Exactly.
Darren, remember this? We'd like your comments regarding that, you know.
Right. Well, the county engineer would do this study.
No, it would be the applicant or the developer. It would be at their expense. They would hire a consultant, engineer, to do that study.
But the engineer's opinion that it's necessary is important to getting it done.
Well, these are licensed people.
But yeah, what I'm saying is that your language says that the engineer or the board of supervisors has to call for it.
Right.
Correct.
So, and this is common language that we picked up from other ordinances.
Yeah.
We need to probably think that through. Mm-hmm. How it,
I don't know.
How the P&Z...
Yeah.
There's a lot of these that we've seen.
Clear buttons we can push.
Right. There's a lot of these that we've seen where we're like, you know, hey, this is like the third or fourth development out that way, and who's looking at, you know, the arterial roads, right? And but that's all we can do is.
But we can always remand it so that the engineer has time to answer our questions, and we can direct the questions around this study. Maybe
if there's a button that we can push to say he needs to answer those questions, he could say.
Well, he could always.
Right. Right.
Right.
Well,
yeah,
it's fine. If we send something back to staff, we send it back to you folks, but then also say we'd like to hear what the county engineer has to say about this not really independent traffic study.
It could be a part of your recommendation always.
Mm-hmm. Can't control the response, but we can...
No, can't control the response, but we've had a couple things where we sent some things back to staff, and the developer changed some things. Cameron States. That got changed quite a bit. No, that did, and that tower. That was going to fall on Highway 30.
Right, they met the county's requirements. One of the few entities that met the local jurisdiction's requirements.
Any other comments on this draft or the staff?
So look at what the entity that's permitted to trigger the study versus.
You know what? I'm not even sure that it takes a language change, but I would like your opinions on what staff's pressure point or what the planning commission's buttons might be.
Okay.
Because we've had, like you said, many opportunities where we said, boy, that would be nice, but
yeah. What's going to happen when this is done?
Right. If this is adopted like this, we really don't have any authority. If nothing changes for us as far as
well. Yeah, there's been one study that I'm aware of since I've been here, and that's Senator Grove Orchard for his conditions permit.
Mm-hmm. And was that required by...
It was a part of the recommendation by the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Adjustment.
But there was also, we had this discussion about George Washington Carver, right? There was the development, the developments around the country club, and then there's the developments on the west side that are south of Cameron School Road that's on top of Cameron Estates that's out there off of Cameron School Road, and it raises questions about, yeah, this is only at, you know, this one, their estimate is it adds, you know, 500 cars round trips a day on top of the 500 from the other one, on top of the 500 from the other one, so incrementally they don't hit any specific standard, but cumulatively there's a real impact, and how do we trigger a, you know, it's kind of like the stormwater runoff, right? If I build 9,900 square feet a year, then I'm good, but what can we do to trigger a kind of a higher level overview on cumulative activities?
Cars. What? 500 cars is a lot of cars in a day.
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
On a road, and I can't imagine there'd be 500 cars on that road. I just can't imagine that.
What road are you talking about?
Well, where the, you know, they said...
Oh, now the...
Well, it's the trips, too.
Yeah.
It's a trip.
He was thinking anywhere from 300 to 400. If he gets 100 kids, if they're coming individually with their parents, going to, leaving, coming back, leaving. So that's four trips per car.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you get to that 400 potentially.
Okay. We on staff comments?
This will come back to us.
Definitely.
Yes.
Yep. Multiple times.
Everything will come back to us.
Sorry.
Thanks for your input on that.
Staff comments?
There's nothing else to say.
All right. Commission comments. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So much.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Cable, McBride, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
That poor kid.